So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who are both holding their breath about John Mateer's availability for this weekend's Red River rivalry, and people who are cautiously optimistic about OU's chances this weekend in the Red River rivalry. This is the podcast for you. This is another episode of The Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and On3-Rivals. I am Jesse Crittenden, and I am joined, as always, by Okie himself, Mr. Brian Clinton. Brian, how much have you been praying the last few days for John Mateer to be available this weekend?
Quite a bit, particularly for John Mateer. I got to be honest. I haven't. I've kind of left that up to chance, I guess. We'll see how everything plays out. Of course, I hope everything goes well. Should probably start throwing a couple up. Why not? I mean, can't hurt.
This will be my fifth OU Texas to cover because I'll be in Dallas this weekend. I don't know if the circumstances have ever been more unusual than they are for this weekend, because Texas goes from the number one ranked team in the country to unranked. They're 3-2. Their season is on the brink this weekend.
Love that.
OU is 5-0 in a top six team. Think about where these two teams started.
Yep.
But Texas is still favored to win this weekend, in large part because OU's starting quarterback may not play. But the team that's unranked with two losses, including a brutal one at Florida last weekend, is the team that's favored. And I know things are weird in the Red River rivalry, and I know it's weird because John Mateer's status is up in play, or is up in the air, but I don't know if the circumstances have been more unique in quite some time than they are for this one.
Yeah. Man. It is odd. I expected Texas to be favored whenever the line came out. But it was only, let me back up. I expected Texas to be favored because there were, three or four weeks ago, whenever they were still holding as one of the top teams in the country, they were still like getting 9.5 points on ESPN. Like,
why didn't we go further? We should be taking victory laps about the Texas Florida game, because we said on this podcast last week that there
that
was
is true.
That
yeah,
Texas was on upset alert.
Reach your hand up in the air and pat yourself on the back, because it was a good call. Very glad we talked about that. It played out very similarly to kind of how we expected. It was a little higher scoring, but last year is kind of an anomaly. Texas has always kind of found a way to drop one of those games, and that one just felt like it was setting up just with where it was on the schedule, who it was. It's not like Florida's lacking talent. And Texas is 0-2 against teams that have a pulse. So here we are.
Here's the thing. I knew Texas would be on – I really thought Texas was on upset alert. And we'll talk more about Texas. Well, later in this pod, we've got a sit-down with Jason Sukumel of Orange Bloods. People who have watched this podcast for long enough know that I tend to have that conversation with him before every OU Texas game. He actually gives some really good breakdown just on the Texas side of things, because there's no way to sugarcoat it. Texas's season is on the is the risk of collapsing is here. Whether that's fair or not, it's here. Having said all that, I knew Texas was on upset alert. I guess I didn't think of two things. One, I didn't realize their offensive line was that bad. I didn't realize it was that bad. And two, their defense did not look very good. And that was the thing I didn't expect. I thought Florida at home, I thought Arch Manning will make – it'll be low scoring and Arch Manning will make a mistake or two late, and that'll be the difference in the game. I did not expect Florida to just punch them in the mouth on both sides of the ball. Yeah. I did not expect that. Texas's defense did not – I mean, Texas gave up 460 yards of offense.
That's wild. Yeah.
In Florida's offense, it looks better now. The numbers look better now. Before that game, they looked
– Oh, the game against – LSU, their offense was abysmal. I mean, it was awful. I think now, granted, having a guy like Dallas Wilson come in,
it's big,
is huge. That guy is a stud. But all things considered, DJ Lagway had time. He had time to throw. Conversely, Arch Manning did not. And that was a Florida team. We've all heard the stats at this point. That was a Florida team coming into the game, had three sacks on the year. Oklahoma is on the opposite end of that spectrum. So, yeah, very interested to see what adjustments are made, because, you know, you kind of hear it all the time. Games are won and lost in the trenches. They're won and lost up front. Sometimes it's really hard to scheme around that. Look no further than 2024 Oklahoma. Bad offensive line. Of course, you have a whole lot of other things going on, but you can start there. The offensive line was just not great, and it led to a really poor offensive unit. And I think Texas is kind of seeing what it looks like to have to replace so many guys up front.
There's a lot of ways we can break down this game this weekend. It's 2:30 Central Time Saturday on ABC. I will be there. I will be at the State Fair. Brian, there's so many things we could talk about in this game. There's three areas I want to focus on specifically, and that's quarterback, running back, and offensive line. Really from both perspectives, but we're going to focus on the OU perspective of things, which is, look, it's going to be John Mateer or Michael Hawkins, obviously, this weekend. I don't even really want to speculate that much. Brent Venables' press conference was earlier today. He was, let's say, non-committal about John Mateer's status. That's the nice way to put it. You could also say that he played a really good game of dodgeball. You could call him Vince Vaughn in the movie Dodgeball, because that's a little bit what that was, which, understandable. I get it. He was even asked about the team practicing on Monday, indoors, which was unusual for them, and he had a good answer for that. Here's the thing. It's going to be one of those two guys. If John Mateer is at quarterback and reasonably healthy, I feel pretty good about Oklahoma's chances. Pretty good. I do. I feel pretty good. I just think that reduces OU's margin of error. I think it just gives them more chances to win. If it's Michael Hawkins, and I think it's worth to talk about if it's Michael Hawkins, because look, John Mateer is going to want to play. Pete Thamel's already reported it. We've heard stuff that if John Mateer has his way, he's going to play this weekend. What I can tell people is it's not that simple. That's what I will tell people. Just because he wants to play doesn't mean he's going to play. I really don't know. OU fans need to prepare for the possibility that's Michael Hawkins Jr. And Brian, I don't know what I learned from Saturday against Kent State when it comes to Michael Hawkins. I don't know. I honestly feel like I didn't learn anything one way or the other about him that I didn't already know.
Yeah.
I don't know. How did you feel about the way Michael Hawkins actually played?
He was He was juiced. He was like very like you could tell. I mean, his feet were kind of all over the place. He missed on some throws, on some easy throws. Kind of like we've seen a little bit with Mateer at times. It feels like he has one speed, one velocity, where that ball, when it comes out, there's not a lot of touch to it. Really, it's there. And his mechanics to me were, I mean, they were different. His release is still, I mean, as quick as it gets. It's very quick, very snappy. He's got arm talent for days. But it just to me it felt like, and maybe it was throwing Keontae Lewis into a brick wall by accident. Like maybe that's what it was. I mean, I can see where that would be difficult for a young guy coming in. I mean, regardless of the fact that he had experience last year, it's hard to not be the leader of the team, step in, and be expected to keep things rolling like Mateer has, and that be your first deep ball. So I could see where that maybe played a role in it. But he just seemed very juiced. Now there were some throws. The one that I continue to go back to is the route where you had a deep end cut from Carrion, or Carrion, yeah, Carrion. I mean, he just put it right on the numbers, right in the guy's face mask. It was perfect. Could not have thrown it better. And you see some of those bright spots. What I liked about it was the offense was able to move still. Last year's team, I just don't think was capable of that. Particularly, even if it was against a team like Kent State with Michael Hawkins in the game, it just seemed like there was too much backyard ball. So there felt like there was a little more command to what was going on. There were some sequences where when he missed one, it turned into missing two, turned into missing three, and you were off the field before you realize it. So, long story short, I don't think you go into it feeling nearly as confident if Hawkins is your guy. But I think we both agree that that's not really the determining factor of where my confidence lies anyways.
I
Like on your
think,
side of the ball.
well, to kind of, I think, to extend your point, if OU wins this weekend, it's going to be because of their defense.
Correct.
That's why they'll win the game. It's
Yes.
regardless of kind of who's at quarterback. Here's what I'll say about Michael Hawkins. I understand why some fans were not happy with the way he played and are not comfortable with him this weekend. Like I get it.
Sure.
Some of the criticisms I didn't understand. I actually saw a ton of comments on our board nitpicking his touchdown throw to Isaiah Satania in the first quarter. I was like, if you're going to criticize him, you can pick a lot of plays. I don't know if that's the one you pick because that play was awesome. That
Yeah.
play was really impressive.
Yeah.
Does that get picked off against an SEC defense? Yeah, probably. Does he throw it? No. Against an SC defense, he probably doesn't throw it. It was also just impressive that he got it there.
Right.
I think you expected the footwork to be better. His footwork is a mess. That's the big, and I'm not a quarterback guru, and I don't even want to pretend like I
But
am.
you don't have to be. You
You
can
don't
see
have to
it.
be.
It's, yeah.
And to me, he looked like a guy that wasn't supposed to play this year. That's got like he to me, it looked like a guy that is at a power four school because he's clearly talented and clearly has athleticism, but he looked like a guy that was not supposed to be playing this year. I think that's like the best way to put it. I initially, before Texas played Florida, I thought, man, unless Hawkins is amazing against Kent State, that's just going to be a really tough ask of him. Now, like, I don't think Texas's defense is bad all of a sudden because it wasn't very good against Florida. But I will say I don't think I feel any better or worse about Michael Hawkins. I think I feel slightly better about the chances that he could be successful against Texas's defense.
Yeah.
However, I still don't know what's going on with this running game.
Yeah.
It was fine against Kent State. It was fine. 4.5 a carry. Got juiced a little bit because Gabe Sawchuk had a big run at the end of the game. They were going to finish with 4.2 yards a carry before he broke off like a 25-yarder. Florida averaged over 4 a carry against Texas, so I don't think Texas is this just elite, stout, unbeatable defense.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel a little bit better for Oklahoma's chances if Hawkins is playing, but I still don't really know what's up with this running game. And to combine that, I thought the offensive line against Kent State was just, it just wasn't good enough. It just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
You know,
the effort as a whole there. There were some times where I remember watching one play in particular, on like a stretch zone play where it felt as if like once a guy, kind of got the movement that he wanted in the initial surge, like his footwork kind of stopped. And I don't want to say that this team lacks effort. Like that has not been, and there hasn't really been a whole lot to indicate that, but, I kind of feel like going from an emotional season or an emotional SEC opener, winning that game against your former quarterback, going into a bye week and then having Kent State before you have Texas. It did feel like it was maybe a little less amped than you would have guessed. And there's a couple of ways to look at it. I think Oklahoma's offense, especially if Hawkins, like let's just play devil's advocate when we're talking about the running game here. If Hawkins is in, he's every bit as dynamic of a runner as Mateer is. Now, he doesn't have the experience. I don't think he necessarily has the power or the ability to go and get you that 1 or 2 yards that Mateer would be able to. But as far as being a threat and being able to force Texas to have to account for him in the running game, that can continue, I think, regardless of which of those guys is out there. What I want to know is, has Ott done enough? Because he wasn't explosive against Kent State. The thing about it is, though, when I go back and watch that game, on the plays that he does get the ball, his patience shows up. Mm-hmm. His vision shows up, and there are just subtle movements. There are subtle things that he is able to do with the ball in his hands that we haven't seen in a little while, and that's make a guy miss in space whenever he kind of has him dead to rights. He can make a defender that's coming full speed miss. I think with Blaylock, you have more of a guy that is going to run downhill and more or less push the pile, if you will. He's got a little better vision than Javonte Barnes does. But I think Ott is a guy that can be a game changer. I just don't know if he's done enough to this point for you to really trust him and say, okay, yeah, we're going to get you 20 touches this game. Go out and do it. Go out and prove us right. I just don't feel really confident going in. Yes, he showed some flashes, but like we just said, it was Kent State. I really don't know what to expect. I would expect the guys to get the most run would be Blaylock and probably Ott, just because I think that was it wasn't by accident that he got going. I don't know if it's something you can hang your hat on, and that's frustrating because the team that runs the ball well in this game historically is the team that wins. And I don't know that you feel great about that. Even with Texas being down its top two running backs, like I still don't know that you feel great about that.
I think I said before the Kent State game, I said, OU should average 6 yards a carry.
Easy.
And they didn't.
Florida State had 498 yards rushing.
Averaged almost 10
yeah.
a carry. Texas Tech averaged 5.7. I was like, oh, you should average 6 yards a carry. And the thing that the thing I thought about with Ott was like, he was fine. Jaden Ott was fine. He was fine. He looked better. He looked better. And yeah, I think they played him against Kent State because I think he's going to play against Texas. I don't know what that
they
looks
need,
like.
They need him to.
They need him to.
They need him to be the guy that they thought he was going to be.
But here's the other part of it, too. Javonte Barnes didn't play against Kent State. He's going to play. Javonte Barnes is going to play. I also thought it was just odd that Xavier Robinson didn't play at all against Kent State.
Yeah, I did too. I did too.
That's part of why I just think the running back rotation is just odd. It made sense that Torrey Blaylock has the most carries because he has the most juice.
Yeah.
He has things he needs. Vision is, I think, the main thing that he needs to work on. But to me, cause, so all of that is to say that I feel like if Hawkins is the guy this weekend, I think you can lean on the running game, which is not something I thought before Texas played Florida. I think there's avenues there to have success against Texas, but I just, cause I actually think that's the way to beat them. If Hawkins is your guy, I think that's the way to beat them. But two things is, are you going to be able to run the ball well enough? What's the running back rotation part of that look like? And is this offensive line going to hold up? Discussion about the offensive line. It has not been as bad as last year. It has not been as bad as last year. Against Michigan, the offensive line was pretty damn solid. Against Auburn, it was good enough. But it's going to have to be better. You know what? I'm saying all of this and sounding negative, and I don't even mean to. Here's the thing. I think Oklahoma's the better football team, kind of regardless if Mateer plays or not.
Yeah,
I think Oklahoma's the better football team. Maybe that's the better way to phrase this, because I was about to go on this whole long thing about the offensive line. Brian, I just think Oklahoma's the better football team. I just think the question is whether they will play like it.
Mm.
And I don't think I've been able to say that at all the last 4 years, including 2021. I don't think I could have said Oklahoma was just the better football team. I think Oklahoma's the better football team.
I agree.
I do.
Yeah. And I think this is the first time in the Venables era that you're walking into this game being able to say that and point to multiple spots on the roster. I think if all things considered, if John Mateer's healthy, hands down, I think anybody in the country takes him over what you've seen out of Arch Manning to this point.
See, that's my other, to quickly interrupt you, I get the questions about Michael Hawkins. I get it. But I think you could ask just as much of a question of, is Arch Manning good enough to beat Oklahoma?
How much better has Arch Manning been to this point than what we saw out of Michael Hawkins last week?
And you know what? And you can say it's just Kent State, but Arch Manning has played 3 awful teams out of 5. And did Arch Manning look any better in those 3 games against sub or non-Power 4 teams than Michael Hawkins looked? Did he look any better? Because I don't think a lot of that is not his fault. His offensive line is atrocious.
Sure.
But he also has happy feet and weird mechanics and bad footwork, and he's indecisive and inaccurate.
He plays hero ball every once in a while and goes, whoa, did you see that? Just like what we saw out of Michael Hawkins. Like, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's so
he's
I guess.
He's super talented. Don't get me wrong. But like.
That's the thing. And part of this is because we're comparing him to preseason expectations, which are not fair. And I think sometimes that's the bad part of preseason expectations is it by the way it works, it ends up coloring the way you watch a player. Where if you didn't know anything about Arch Manning, I think you would watch him and say, that is an average Power 4 quarterback. He is an average Power 4 quarterback. And that's still not good enough if you're Texas, but it would feel substantially better if you didn't have the expectation that he's next year's number one pick in the NFL draft,
right?
Compared to if you just watched him as a guy. Having said all of that, I don't know why there would be any more confidence that Arch Manning can win this game than there would be if Michael Hawkins went in this game. That's maybe been the biggest disconnect I've had through all of the discourse, even Texas being favored. Mm-hmm. Like, are you telling me right now that Arch Manning is that much better of a player than Michael Hawkins? Right now, right this second.
Because on the opposite side of the ball, how do you look at it and say Texas's defense has been better than Oklahoma's?
That's a better way to phrase this. What gives you confidence that Arch Manning is going to have more success against OU's defense than Michael Hawkins is going to have against Texas's defense?
Exactly.
That's the better way to frame it.
Yes. That's why I don't understand. Cause we saw, you know, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Josh Pate confirmed with FanDuel that 1.5 points is assuming that John Mateer plays, which is what we're seeing right now. Right. If John Mateer is confirmed out, they would say the line's closer to 5.5 in Texas's favor.
I don't get that.
I don't. I don't either. I'm curious. I don't get to it. To me, that feels like, because I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm a shark or I'm one of those guys that knows how the line setting happens in Vegas. But that just feels fishy to me. I don't know what I have seen out of Texas in the games that I have watched. No, I didn't sit and watch the entire Sam Houston game. Like, probably half the Texas fans that are going to listen to this podcast didn't watch that entire game. I mean, but when you watch them against quality opponents, what I've seen out of Oklahoma versus what I've seen out of Texas, it just doesn't. It's not mathing. The math's not mathing, Jesse.
No, it's not. And here's the other part of it, too. Because it's not just all on Arch Manning, part of this is it's the infrastructure around him. And I don't want people to clip what I just said and say that I am insinuating that Michael Hawkins Jr. is better than Arch Manning. I'm not saying that. I'm hoping that did not get lost in what we're saying. But, I mean, Texas's rushing offense has been bad. Like, they're 55th in the country, which sounds better than it actually is. If you look at the way that, their running backs have been beat up. Wisner's been hurt. Like, I get it. But I just don't know where Arch Manning in this Texas offense, I don't know where they attack Oklahoma, because the one part of Oklahoma's defense that's vulnerable is deep passing explosive plays. That's the one area that Oklahoma has been leaky. But not only has Texas not been great at that through 5 weeks, but is their offensive line going to even hold up long enough against this OU defensive line? Texas gave up 6 sacks against Florida, and it should have been 15. That's what it felt like, at least watching that game.
Wild.
And Texas's rushing game has already been average. It was pretty bad against Florida, and OU is fantastic defending the run. OU's rushing defense is one of the best in the country. The defensive line is one of the best in the country. I think that's, like, to me, almost regardless of who plays quarterback for Oklahoma, I'm looking at where does Texas attack this team? And I just don't even, I don't know where Sark looks.
Well, and like, let's add another layer to this. Because this hasn't been the case for Oklahoma in any of the last 3 years. Coming into this game and you'll be able to look this up because you're our stats and analysis guy. You can look it up quicker than I could. I would bet the farm that efficiency wise, Oklahoma comes into this from a special teams perspective with a marked advantage, just with how good the special teams has been over the last several games.
I asked Brent about that today. It's funny you said that. OU, I think, is their 12th or 13th in ESPN's special teams efficiency rankings. They're fourth in SP Plus, which is a really, really elite mark. But I'm glad you brought up special teams too, because to me, I think OU has the clear advantage defensively and on special teams. Like, you can go into this game feeling like if it goes into a one possession game, teams play is going to make the difference, that Oklahoma has the advantage there. They just do. So, anyways, I interrupted your point.
No,
Continue.
you added to my point. It's from a punting and a, I mean, Grayson Miller, I'm looking at it here. Grayson Miller's second nationally. 49 and a half, 49.8 yards. He's averaging four punts a game. That's good second in the country. And you
Tate
add to
Sandell's
that,
been nails
Tate,
too.
yes, Tate Sandell has made, what is it, eight straight attempts now after missing his first. The guy's been awesome. Just kicked a 55 yarder. Like you look at it across the board, and here I am wearing an OU hoodie, sounding like an OU homer in the middle of this podcast, which I guess at this point I can just come out and
You can
say
come out.
I have crimson colored glasses on. But just from an analytical standpoint, you can throw the records out. I get all of that. This is the Red River Shootout. Anything can happen. But the fact remains, I think the biggest tipping point in this game is always, it seems like, one of the defensive lines from one of these teams ends up dominating the other, or causing problems for the other. A few years ago, it was the 2015 Oklahoma, when Texas's defense creates issues for Baker Mayfield, and like a team that shouldn't have been playing that game ends up beating Oklahoma. This feels like an opportunity for Oklahoma's defensive line to cause some real problems, and like that's what I can't see past. Is that what Florida's defensive line just did with several of its top players out? I don't know, man. That to me is going to be a big challenge for Texas to rise to, especially coming off of that loss. So I don't know, man. We'll see.
Well, I just that's and I'm glad you said all that because I think that comes to my I think the way I look at this game is I just think Oklahoma is better. And I think as you said, I think the defensive line, OU's defensive line is what that all centers around because they're going up against a faulty Texas offensive line and going up against a quarterback who we know struggles with facing pressure. And we know all the problems that come from that. And I think the only way I look at this is I think if Michael Hawkins plays, if he's your guy, I think it decreases your margin for error. I think Oklahoma should still win if Michael Hawkins plays. That's kind of the that's genu and I know people are gonna hear this and feel like that's ridiculous. And I get it because what I even mean by margin of error is it increases the chances that you have a really bad mistake. It increases the or it decreases your chances of explosive plays. It makes offensive line issues more like a bigger eyesore if Michael Hawkins is your guy compared to so like I get all of this and I don't want to and I truly don't want to like just throw Texas as if they're not worth anything. I just think Oklahoma should win this game. I do. I just think if Michael Hawkins is playing, they just have less avenues to do it. Than they would if Mateer would play. But I think regardless of who's at quarterback, I think Oklahoma has more paths to win than Texas does. That's how I feel about this game.
Agreed.
That's how I feel. Do you have a prediction? One if do you want to give one if Mateer plays and one if Hawkins plays, or just one across the board?
Yeah, I'll do one if Mateer plays. 27-13 if Mateer plays.
I like that.
Yeah, 27-13 if Mateer plays. If Hawkins plays, 17-13 if Hawkins plays.
I like that. I'm gonna go just across the board. I think Oklahoma wins 21-14. Just
Nice, nice clean touchdowns all across the board.
21-14. I want to say all that to say I think this game is going to be competitive, and it would not shock me if Texas wins. The one thing that you really can't account for, and I normally don't even like to throw this into analysis, but I also think it's unavoidable in this case. If Texas loses, their season's over. If you don't think that, I mean, Florida beat the hell out of them last week, and I think it's because you saw a team that was 1-3 fighting for their lives. Their coach is on the hot seat. They got beat up the week before, and they came out and just punched Texas in the mouth. Yeah. And I do actually think that's a variable here is Oklahoma has to come out and recognize that Texas is kind of playing for more than Oklahoma is. Yeah.
I see it from a perspective of Texas has embarrassed Oklahoma two of the last 3 years.
That's true. That's true.
And for me, I would be very surprised if that has, I'm sure it's been shared ad nauseum already. Yeah, this is an opportunity for you to go and prove that your coach is who people say that he's not. This is a really good opportunity. I don't prescribe to any of the doubts that against Brent Venables as a head coach. I just think this is an opportunity for you to say, okay, yeah, we're even the score. Look at this. Yeah, Oklahoma in a couple of these games has been outclassed. There's been some opportunities where Texas has kind of run away with it. But and you look at the end of the day, Venables is 2-2 against Texas. That's right up. That's on par. So
just let it be a good, halfway decent game. I don't want. Last year was brutal.
It sucks.
This sucks.
Well, because it was competitive for a quarter and a half, things fell. I mean, it was like the was it a fumble or an interception in the second quarter?
God,
there was a turnover where things piled up on Oklahoma like that going into the second half, and it was like, yeah, this is over with. They don't have the juice to pull this out. And then Texas ran away with it in the second half.
I think it'll be a good game. I do.
I do too.
I think Oklahoma wins a good game.
Yep.
And I think Texas will have some punches. I do. Having said all of that, I think Texas will have a couple of good punches on both sides of the ball. I really
more often than not in that game, especially, you can count on it.
That's going to do it for us here. This portion of the Oklahoma Drill, you guys stay tuned to my conversation with Jason Sukumel of Orange Bloods to get the Texas perspective of things going into this weekend. But Brian, appreciate your time. Let's hope for a good one this weekend and stay tuned for my conversation with Jason.
Do that now.
And with that, let's go to me and Jason. And now we enter in the portion of the Oklahoma Drill podcast where we bring in one of my favorite guests. We've done this. This is at least the third year, if not the fourth. I think it's year three. Welcome in Jason Sukumel of orangebloods.com. I think the best Texas site out there. Jason, I appreciate you not only making time, but I originally said we were going to go Wednesday, but now we're doing this Tuesday afternoon. Appreciate you making time. How are you, man?
I'm good, Jesse. Always fun coming on with you, and appreciate you having me on and appreciate the kind words about Orange Bloods. Yeah, we're going to have a lot to talk about today. We'll try to cram it in. It's an interesting game. Like, I remember 2 years ago, I picked mm-hmm. Texas, and I mm-hmm. feel like I was fairly confident, and they lose. And then last year, you're like, all right, dude, you're going to do it again? I was like, yes, I am. But and it worked out well. But this year, I don't know what to expect, man, really from either team. We'll get into that. I've got my mind set where I think my prediction's going to go. But there are just so many unknowns with this game as we sit here and talk today that it's kind of hard to handicap this one right now.
No, it is, and that's why I appreciate you having you on every year to talk about OU Texas. And I mentioned this to you before we started recording, but OU Texas is always weird, and there's always different circumstances. But this is just, I think if anybody would have guessed that one team was undefeated and ranked inside the top six and one team was 3-2 and unranked, you probably would have thought it would be flipped. It would be Oklahoma that's 3-2 and Texas that's 5-0, but it's flipped yet. Texas is still favored to win this weekend. And this is maybe the wonkiest set of circumstances I've seen for a weekend in quite some time.
Yeah, I did see the line has come down a couple points now that the Mateer stuff is starting to trickle out there. I actually got crap on our message board because I said on, I think it was Sunday, I was like, that's ridiculous that Texas is favored. I just think Texas gets so much undeserved benefit of the doubt because of the preseason ranking. Frankly, probably because the name Arch Manning is still attached to this team, and Arch has been okay. I mean, but I don't know. They haven't earned that justification. They're an unranked team playing the number six team in the country. But you're right. A month and a half ago, people on Orange Bloods, and not just subscribers and fans. I mean, some of the staff was like, "Gosh, what week is Venables going to get fired?" And now they've got it cooking. And now Sark's not on the hot seat, but there are a lot of Texas fans that have lost faith and lost trust in Sark and this team and this program. It happens pretty quickly, such as life in college football. But yeah, it's been a kind of an upside down, topsy turvy world when you throw the quarterback situation with Oklahoma, and it's going to be a very interesting week, a very interesting game. Texas, I think, as we're talking, I think I saw 1.5 point favorites. I mean, I could see it. I could see Texas winning this game. Certainly, their backs are against the wall, but we'll break it down a little more, and then we'll kind of get into predictions. But yeah, it's really a tough. I don't feel good about it. Whatever prediction I make, I really don't feel that good about it.
Well, and as you mentioned, that Mateer's injury that obviously has an impact on the betting line, and to some extent, but it also just makes this weekend even wonkier because of OU's quarterback situation. But you touched on it there. I actually got to watch the post game live from you and Ketch and just Orange Bloods after the Florida game, and I actually got to watch some of that Florida game. As you know, being on a beat, sometimes it's hard
Sure.
to watch everything. I got to watch most of that second half, and I got to watch you guys for at least the first 30 to 45 minutes. And the thing that stuck out to me, and obviously the panic alarms are going off with this Texas team right now, and you guys know that. But the thing that stood out to me was that you guys were all, I think, rightfully a little bit surprised the result went the way it did, and I think rightfully criticizing the way the team played. But at the same time, you guys were also kind of shining a light on some of the issues that led to the loss that you could maybe kind of see before the season. You mentioned like the offensive line and stuff like that, but all of that is to say this team's 3-2. That Florida game was pretty rough. Where is this team right now? How much are the panic buttons actually being pushed right now?
Depends on who you ask. And it's funny, Jesse. Every week I do a column, and within that column, I rank the teams, all 16 teams in the SEC. Well, this week I have Texas ranked 11th in the SEC. Last week I had Texas 7th. 2 weeks ago I had them 9th. So I have not had this Texas team ranked very highly. And people on our website have been like, Sucamel is an idiot. He's terrible at this. He doesn't watch football. I'm like, yeah, I do watch football. I just don't watch it through orange tinted glasses. This team is not playing very well. I mean, Ohio State, okay, you lost by 7. Ohio State really didn't pressure Texas. They kind of treated Julian Sain, their new quarterback, with they had a training wheels on, if you will. That's a much different Ohio State team now. Ohio State would beat Texas pretty significantly the way both teams are playing now. Even their three non-conference kind of patsies, Texas didn't look great other than Sam Houston, whatever. Sam Houston didn't look great against UTEP, didn't look great against San Jose State. So, like in my rankings, I'm like, hey, I've got Texas 7th, 9th in the conference, and because they're not playing well. And they go to Florida, and frankly, they lose by 8. It didn't feel like it was that close of a ball game. It felt like Florida dominated even more so than that. So coming out of this game, I'm like, hey, this is just not a very good team. It's an average team at best. What's gone wrong? I mean, the offensive line was terrible against Florida. It hadn't been great all year. They can't run the ball, which is partly a reflection of the offensive line. Arch Manning, considering all the pressure he faced, actually did okay against Florida. I mean, it's not going to be a game he, saves and tells his grandkids about it someday, but he actually held up okay in the face of adversity. The defense didn't play well in really their first true test, and this was a Florida offense that's been terrible this year. So it's just they had a punt block for a safety. I mean, honestly, Jesse, it's a team that's just not playing very good football in any phase. I keep thinking the switch is going to flip. But at what point do you look at this team and say, hey, we're 5 games in, it is what it is? this is who this football team is. I don't know, rivalry games can change things in a hurry. We'll see if things look better this week. But, ironically, before the season started, I actually picked Texas to lose that Florida game. I went game by game in one of my columns, and I picked them to lose to Florida. Not because I thought Florida was going to be that good, not because I thought Texas was going to be this bad. I just said, well, I got to find a loss in here somewhere. I had them
Right.
losing to Georgia. And I said, okay, they're probably going to lose one other one. Yeah, maybe it'll be Oklahoma, maybe A&M. I said, nah, Florida on the road. That makes sense. But that was a pretty bad Florida game, team coming into that game. And they took it to Texas pretty good. So Texas has, they're licking their wounds. They have a lot of things they need to correct, starting with the offensive line. Defensive line looked pretty bad last week. So there's a lot of areas they need to improve in a hurry if they're going to have a chance this weekend. But yeah, it's been a tough season to kind of figure out. And just how, when you factor in preseason expectations, it's almost mind-boggling how far off this team is from preseason expectations. But then you look at preseason expectations, and you mentioned, we said on our postgame show, he's like, well, they're replacing four out of five offensive linemen. They're replacing a top 10 tackle, a top 10 draft pick at tackle. They're replacing a first round draft pick at receiver. They're replacing a really good tight end. I mean, it kind of makes sense when you look at it, like, I think everybody was giving this team so much benefit of the doubt because of Arch Manning, because of what's happened the last 2 years with back-to-back college football playoff runs. But it was unwarranted, it was unearned, and they're not living anywhere up to those expectations, obviously.
You answered a couple of the questions that I was going to ask you in there, but I'll focus on maybe the easiest part of it, and it's Arch Manning, who I mean the expectations for him were off the charts and
Heisman, he was
probably
the Heisman front runner before the season started, per the odds makers, right? Like, how ridiculous does that sound now? So,
and incredibly and probably not super fair if you look
no,
at it
it
that way
wasn't. Yeah,
too.
exactly. Yeah.
But when you look at, I mean, I think there's obviously when a team like Texas falls to 3-2 and you have someone with the preseason expectations like him, I think he's an easy target for criticism. I watch him. I've watched him a couple of games now. I don't think there's any way to really paint him as he's been great. I don't think there's any
No.
way you could say that. But when you look at the numbers, in particular some of the advanced stats, like when he's under pressure, when he's not under pressure. The stats to me and even the eye test kind of paint maybe an average kind of quarterback, and obviously that's disappointing to where he was expected to be. But I guess all that to put it into a bow, where would you rate him through 5 games? How would you just assess his season? And on the list of problems with the offense, how high or low would you put him on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. How would I rate him? I guess if you're asking me just to grade his play, I mean, I'd probably give him a C. He's passing, but barely. I mean, Florida, I mean, listen, he gets zero help. But he's had a couple moments where it's like, okay, he just did not play well. So
Right.
now if you're asking me to grade him on preseason expectations, which, like you said, probably were not fair. Well, yeah, he's failing that, obviously. So, it's funny. Like, I look at Arch, into some degree, Texas, and I say it's kind of like, well, it's kind of like them being favored this week. Okay, they haven't really earned that. It's kind of like, I liken that to like the Dallas Cowboys or the New York Yankees. Every year before the season starts, they're probably going to be
It's the
overvalued
year.
because the people know the public's going to like bet on them. The public's going to bet on Arch Manning, because they think he's going to take over and win the Heisman and lead this team to a national championship. Well, the public got taken by Vegas once again, right? But yeah, I don't think Arch is the biggest issue. They don't have a running game. They can't keep their running backs healthy. Their offensive line has not been good. I mean, last week was just god awful, and they haven't been that bad, but they haven't been good. Their wide receivers aren't making plays for Arch, even when he throws the ball to them. I mean, here and there, but they're not just dominating the opponents. They're not getting separation. They're not making big one-on-one plays very often. The tight end play has been disappointing. Jack Andrews, a transfer out of Cal, big expectations for him. He hasn't done a whole lot. So, I mean, listen, all eyes go to the quarterback, right? It's an easy one to say, okay, yeah, the quarterback play's not been good. But Arch can accept some of the blame. He will tell you that. He has said that. But he's not alone by any stretch of the imagination. He's probably not even the biggest culprit of this offense's struggles. I mean, I think right now, most everybody would say, hey, it's the offensive line. based off of that game last week against Florida. Now they're going up against an Oklahoma team with a great defensive front. So, it doesn't look to get a whole lot better this week. Arches uses legs to get himself out of some trouble sometimes. I expect we'll see that again, maybe even more this weekend. That's really the only run game they've had, Jesse. There, I mean, they can't run the ball at all. But yeah, I mean, Arch has been okay, but certainly okay was not what was expected of him.
Well, and it just seems like there's problems with the infrastructure, and he's not done a whole lot to make those problems better. Is that maybe kind of a fair way to kind of
You're talking about
summarize
Arch is
that?
not?
Yeah, Arch hasn't. Yeah, like there's problems with the infrastructure
I
around
guess, but I
him.
mean, there's only so much you can do when you get the ball in your hands and there's already a defender in your face. So
I
now
was surprised it was only six sacks against Florida. It
I
felt
know.
like
Well, I
more.
think someone said, like, I don't have the stat in front of me, on whatever 30 dropbacks he was pressured, or 25 dropbacks he was pressured like 35 times. I'm like, how
Yeah.
does that? That doesn't even equate. You got multiple guys pressuring him on multiple snaps, I guess. But like the biggest critique that I'm finding from fans and media and is like, hey, this offensive line's not very good. But how did the coaches let it get that way? They didn't address
Right.
anything in the portal. They haven't recruited particularly well at the offensive line the last couple of years. And you knew you had your franchise quarterback, or what you thought, and some still think, is your franchise quarterback. How did you not get a better line to protect Arch Manning, who's supposed to be the, not the savior of the program, obviously, but you get it. So, like, how did the staff and Sark and the people who make the personnel decisions and the O-line coach, obviously, how did they let it get to this point where you had Arch Manning, but you didn't address restocking that offensive line, and now they're paying for it?
Well, that's why, to me, as much as the offensive issues have been notable through the first 4 weeks or through the first four games, I think the thing that surprised me a little bit was the defense against Florida. And that's what I wanted to ask you about that too, because I just felt, I was looking ahead because OU had Kent State last week. And like, man, if there's one thing this OU team hasn't done very well, it's run the ball. Texas has defended the rush really well, and the defense overall has just been elite. But I was pretty surprised that Florida, I mean, they finished with 457 total yards. They ran the ball over 4 yards per carry, and it just seemed like they were able to sustain drives. And I kind of thought if Texas is going to be competitive, if no other reason, because the defense, but it didn't feel like the defense played very well. So I guess I just wanted to ask you, where is this defense at right now? And were you surprised the defense maybe struggled a little bit, or do you think it's because the offense is struggling and that maybe impacts the defense a little bit? Like, just where are you right now with where this defense is?
Yeah, I don't think it was the offense affecting the defense, because Florida took the opening drive and drove right down and scored. Was I surprised? Yes and no, and that's easy to say now. But like, this defense had played really well, but it hadn't played anybody. I mean, Ohio State's the number one team in the country, but again, if you went back and watched that Ohio State game, they called it about as vanilla as they could. Even coming out of that game immediately afterwards, Ryan Day was like, "Yeah, we probably could have put more on Julian Sain's shoulders." Well, so Ohio State kept it pretty simple. They know they didn't score a lot, need to score a lot of points to win that game. And then Texas plays three cupcakes, and they look really good against those three cupcakes. But I'm like, okay, it's three cupcakes. Now, Florida came into that game. They were dreadful on offense, and DJ Lagway is not 100%. So the fact that Texas hadn't played anybody, I thought maybe I was like, hey, this defense maybe is getting oversold a little bit. I need to see it against a team like Oklahoma or even Vanderbilt, a team with a decent offense. Now, so I wasn't totally surprised that, this defense hadn't been tested and it didn't live up to the first four games. But I was surprised that it happened against Florida, because this Florida offense had been dreadful coming in. Lagway was on his game. He had a great game. They got their stud freshman receiver for the first game of the year, Dallas Wilson, and he
He
went
was
off.
great.
Texas missed some tackles. The biggest surprise to me, Jesse, was the way Florida ran the ball. You mentioned it, especially early on. I mean, they just ran it down Texas's throats, and guys weren't getting touched. The backs weren't getting touched till they're 5 yards downfield. I look up, I'm like, damn, they're averaging 8 yards a carry. I'm like, making it look easy. The Texas front seven and the interior of the defensive line had played really well coming into that game, but they got pushed around in that game. And you look at it, like, okay, Is that what we're really going to expect? Because, okay, yeah, you guys were dominant against Sam Houston. You were dominant against UTEP, but your first really decent offensive line pushed you guys around. What's going to happen in SEC play now? So it was a bit surprising. Like, I could paint myself a picture in my mind where this defense comes back, they're pissed off, they're embarrassed. Maybe they come out and play like lights out against Oklahoma. I can see that happening, but I can also see, like, hey, that defense, what we saw against Florida, is the real Texas defense, not what we saw the first four games. So again, it's this season, man. It's tough to make any like bold predictions about what we're going to see this coming weekend and even the weekends to follow. So I'll have, ask me again on Saturday evening, and I'll have a better idea of what to make of this Texas defense, because it's been very up and down.
Well, and that's, I mean, all of a sudden, it's crazy how things can change. But, now we go into this weekend, Texas is 3-2, and it really does feel like Texas is kind of playing for its season this weekend. And maybe that's the best recipe possible to get some urgency. That's the other thing I wanted to ask you real quick before we get into this matchup is, I even know I watched Sark's press conference on Monday, and I think he fielded a couple of questions about the team. Maybe effort not being there or intensity not being there. Has that been something you've noticed? Was there a concern with the fight in the team? Is that a concern, or is something like this weekend a way to kind of awaken them in some ways, or is that just the old, well, they lost, so the effort wasn't there kind of question?
Yeah, I don't think, I really haven't thought it was an issue of effort. I just thought they got out executed on Saturday at Florida. I mean, Florida, their backs were against the wall, right? They're
That's
playing at
true.
home. People thought their coach might get fired if Texas beats them. I didn't really question the effort. Like I said, it was disappointing the way they got kind of pushed around on both sides of the line of scrimmage. But yeah, I don't think, and I'm trying to recall, I don't remember. I don't think Sark said he was disappointed with the effort. I don't think so. He's always praised the effort week to week. Even on Monday in his press conference, he said, "Hey, man, our guys came out, had a great practice this week. They came out in the way that they should after a loss, and went to work and were upbeat and focused. Practice fast, practice aggressively." But you're right. If there was a problem with the effort, and I don't really see it that way, but if there was, what better way to get that back on track than a rivalry game, right? Against the Red River rivalry. So I don't think it's a matter of effort in my eyes. I think it's just more execution. And honestly, I just don't think the talent and execution has been that good. I don't think it's for lack of effort. I don't think Florida came out and played that much harder. I just think they played better.
Well, and then when we look forward to this weekend, and it just seems to me, both offensive lines for Oklahoma and Texas have struggled a little bit to this point. Defensive lines have kind of been seen as the strength, I think, for both of these teams. But when you and obviously it makes it difficult because we don't know if John Mateer is going to play. I think it's very possible we don't know for sure until Friday night or Saturday morning. But when you look at this matchup, just where these two teams stack on paper, where they're at in their respective seasons right now, what stands out to you? Is there a matchup? Is there an area that you think tells the story, or one that you're looking at closely going in?
Yeah, the easy and obvious one has to be after last week in the Texas offensive line against a good Oklahoma defensive line. If they can't protect Arch better and block the run game better, Texas, that is, of course, I don't think they have a chance of winning this game. Now, that being said, they can't be much worse, right? So, I mean, I've seen this happen before years ago at Texas where their offensive line was getting beat up. They're terrible. They went up to Lincoln, Nebraska to play. I think it was a top five ranked Nebraska team. And I remember talking to some players and coaches about this, and they were pissed, man. They went out and just, their backs were against the wall, like I said, and they came out and they shoved the ball down Nebraska's throat all game. Am I expecting that this week from Texas? Not necessarily, but I do think they might have a bounce back performance to play better than they did last week. It has to start there. I mean, Arch has to do his thing. I think there are chances for Texas in the passing game in this one. I don't know that Texas will run the ball very well, but if they can protect for Arch, I think they've got chances to make some plays in the passing game. Defensively for Texas, again, there's so many, like if Mateer's playing, like People in Orange Bloods think I'm crazy. I'm like, that dude's freaking legit. Like when I watch Mateer, I mean, I like him a lot. So if Mateer's playing, but then again, if he's playing, I'm like, okay, how healthy is he going to be? Is he going to be as accurate? Is he going to be able to run the ball because he might be worried about re-injuring his hand? Is he going to have grip strength? I mean, I just don't know if he even plays what to expect. It's going to be a fun game, dude, because I really don't know what to expect. But if you're asking me one matchup that I think might dictate this thing, I think it's Texas's offensive line versus Oklahoma's defensive line and front seven, if you will.
I agree with you. And then just to add a little bit more, I was curious about because the running game has been so bad for Texas this season, and obviously you're going up against a or Texas is going up against a an OU defensive line that's been one of the best in the country. Do you expect do they orient more of the offense around Arch Manning trying to take some chances down the field? Do they orient it more around him running the ball and moving away less from the backfield? Do you imagine, I mean, do they shake things up with the way they've tried to do things from a game plan standpoint? I mean, 'cause I guess to me, I think it's easy to say, well, Arch Manning has been maybe the best part of the rushing offense, but you can also run him too much and you risk him getting hurt and hit and all that stuff. But what do you envision from that standpoint? Do they just move away from the running game? Do they orient it more around Arch Manning?
It's a good question because Sark, he loves to stick out his chest and say, oh, we were able to run the ball and we ran the ball 12 straight plays to close out a game. But they just don't have that personnel here this year. Trey Wisner, their starting running back, has been hurt. He came back last week, wasn't himself, re-aggravated an injury. We don't even know if he'll be available this week. CJ Baxter, kind of 1A starter, he's been out. So they haven't had the personnel at running back. Wisner actually ran the ball pretty well against, or fairly well, I should say, against Ohio State. So if he was back and healthy, I think that would help things. He's not. So do they lean more on Arch? I would. And even if it's off schedule runs, that's where he seems to be at his best. Like, hey, dude, if you feel pressure, take off and run with it. That's where he seems to be at his best. That's Texas's best running game. That's not necessarily Sark's MO. He doesn't want to risk getting him injured. He wants to run the ball more traditionally. But you know what, dude? Maybe you've got to do what you got to do at this point and tell Arch, hey, you run whenever the heck you think you have an opportunity. Pushing the ball downfield has always been Arch Manning's strength. He couldn't do that last week because Florida was getting so much pressure on him so quickly. You got to have some time for those routes to develop. There really wasn't that time. Sark said on Monday, someone said, well, could you use like the quick game, maybe the underneath passing to get things going, to get Arch going? And he said, well, Florida was smart. They took that away and forced us to run deeper routes, which normally that's what they wanted to do. They thought going into that game, that's where Florida was susceptible. We can hit them downfield with our bigger receivers. Arch is pretty accurate downfield, but not when you're getting, a blitzer or not even a blitzer, just a defensive lineman in your face in 2 seconds. Well, you don't have time to make those plays. So I don't know what the answers are, but it all has to start with blocking things better. If you're going to take your shots downfield, which they would like to do, you got to give the play time to develop, right? If you're going to run the ball, I think it's going to have to be with Arch. I think it's going to have to be off scheduled, unscripted runs sometimes. Maybe some just design quarterback runs because I don't know what running back is going to be healthy. I don't know what running back is capable, and I don't know if the offensive line is capable of blocking a traditional running game. So I think Arch is going to have to be more involved in that aspect.
Well, I guess just to ask just kind of a broad general summary. I've asked you for predictions in the past. I'm not going to do that
No,
now.
okay.
I'm not going to do that now. Well, I guess I'll do it, but in a less specific way. I guess I just, how do you see this weekend playing out? Because you've got all those issues you mentioned with Texas, especially the offensive line. Their backs are against the wall. This is kind of a make it or break it weekend. I don't think either of us expected Texas to be in this kind of situation heading into this game. But how do you, I mean, with all of those issues, how do you think this weekend plays out? Is this a weekend they can kind of put it all together, or is it going to be tough sledding for them to win? Because I guess I'll put it this way and say, I think this is the first time I've covered an OU Texas game where, to me, even regardless of John Mateer, it just seems like maybe there are more paths to victory for Oklahoma than there are for Texas. But I would be silly to think Texas can't win this game. So where's your head at right now just going into this weekend?
Yeah, I think those are both very fair thoughts. It's funny. I posted a column on Monday night on Orange Bloods, and my last thing is a prediction. I said, you know what? F it. I said, I'm picking Texas to win this game because
Okay.
their backs are against the wall. They have to win it. And I said, Oklahoma's number six in the country. I've been on Orange Bloods all month. The last month, I've had Oklahoma ranked very highly in my SEC power ranking. I think I had them two or three before the Metiri injury. I dropped them a little bit, but I've got them back up there. So I've had Oklahoma high in my rankings. I think Oklahoma's a really good team. Do I think they're the number six team in the country? I don't know about that. So I think they're really good, but I think they're beatable. So I said, you know what? Texas's backs are against the wall. I think this offensive line's going to bounce back. I think I'm going to pick Texas. But then, now I step back from that. And as the week goes on, I start analyzing the game more and more. And I'm like, what has Texas really done to earn the benefit of the doubt? I mean, they've just not been a very good football team. They've been pretty average at best, maybe. Like I said, I've got Texas 11th in the SEC this week. I don't remember where I had Oklahoma, maybe fourth, maybe. I can't quite remember. And it was Alabama, Ole Miss, A&M, and then I think Oklahoma. So my head tells me, Jesse, based on what I've seen from these two teams, especially with Metiri possibly coming back. Again, I don't know what version of him that is. Is that a 75% Metiri? I don't know. My head tells me, hey, Texas hasn't earned that benefit of the doubt. I'm probably going to wind up picking Oklahoma when I make my formal prediction on Orange Bloods on Thursday. We do that. I'll probably pick Oklahoma just because I think from what I've seen of these two teams there, they look like the better football team. But like you said, could Texas win? Absolutely. I think it'll be a competitive, probably a one-score game. I mean, a turnover, special teams play, stuff like that. I mean, if Texas actually blocks well, yeah, Texas can win this game. But common sense, my eyeball test tells me Oklahoma is playing better football. That's where I'll probably pick.
Is this the first time I think you've at least indicated you're leaning Oklahoma's way, at least on this
Definitely
pod?
in the times you and I have
Yes.
talked. Yeah. No, believe me, there have been years in the past I would have bet my house on Oklahoma. But no, this is the first time I think in the last 3 years I've picked Oklahoma. Yeah, for definitely.
Like, it's the last question I'll ask you is just, I guess, and I don't even like to deal in hypotheticals, but obviously it's huge if Texas wins this game, because if you get momentum, all of a sudden it feels like goals are back on the table. If they lose this game, and some of those issues you mentioned, the offensive line, maybe the defense again just isn't quite where people thought it might be. If it's those, it maybe Arch Manning again, it's just kind of it's an okay game, not a great game. Where I mean, obviously, I wouldn't think Sark is just going to be on the hot seat if they go through, if they start 3-3. Texas has had an incredible amount of success the last couple of years, but what do you think the reaction will be if Texas loses this weekend?
Well, I think a lot of people are expecting them to lose this weekend, so maybe that softens the blow a little bit. But Sark's, you're right, he's not on the hot seat. That'd be silly. But some of the assistants are, and just some of the management of the program is. So if they fall to 3-3, they've got some tough games coming up too. So he's not on the hot seat, but I mean, Jeff Ketchum, the Orange Bowl publisher, said this after the game on Saturday when they lost to Florida. He goes, you know what? This is when Sark, yeah, they went through 5-7 his first year, but he kind of got a pass, and they've built up since then and been really good, right? But Sark, for the first time, is getting a sense of what it's like to be the head coach at Texas. Because when you struggle, they're not patient around here, right? And then, I mean, some people are like throwing in the towel. Oh, he's done. The Sark tenure's over. We just need to move on. I'm like, okay, that seems a little premature. But, he's getting some heat now. He'll definitely get a lot more heat if they lose on Saturday, because for all intents and purposes, the season's over at that point. If you lose this game, I mean, yeah, you can still make a bowl game, do all that kind of stuff. But the joy of the season, the potential of winning or making the SEC championship game or making the college football playoffs, that's out the window if they lose to Oklahoma. So, yeah, this is a big game. And I wrote about it in my column on Monday night. I said, hey, not only is it a big game for obvious reasons, records and things you want to accomplish this year, but Oklahoma's trending up. Texas A&M is trending up. Texas is trending down. Texas needs to kind of reverse that flow a little bit, and it has to start this week because then it starts affecting recruiting and just perception and, momentum and things like that. So this is a big, big game for Texas. Arguably, you could say even bigger than Oklahoma. Maybe not. I mean, hell, Oklahoma's paying to keep themselves in the national championship hunt. But I mean, Texas really, their season is at stake this weekend. So it does feel like a must-win game. And if they don't win, yeah, the Heat will be on Sark. Not in a way like he's going to get fired or anything like that, but he's going to face a lot of criticism that he hasn't faced before.
Should be a fun one this weekend. Hopefully, just God willing, it's better than last year. I mean, good Lord, just hopefully it's better than last year. I would like to be able to watch the fourth quarter from the press box instead of feeling like, oh, I can go to the press conference room. I can hang out for the last 15 minutes. It's not that important, but
I think it will be. I think it'll be a competitive game. It may not be, both teams may make some mistakes, but may not be the cleanest game ever. But it should be a fun, exciting, competitive, I think, competitive game. Then again, we've seen crazy things happen in this game, so it's wildly unpredictable.
that's Jason Sukumel. You can follow him and his colleagues' work at orangebloods.com. Nobody in the Texas market does it better than them. Jason, appreciate you. I guess after, if this, I think this is year three. I think that's when you can say it's annual, right? Three or
It's, yeah, I
after.
like it.
It's an annual tradition. So appreciate you hopping on. Everybody, if you want the Texas end of things, go to orangebloods.com and we'll see what happens this weekend.
All
Appreciate you,
right,
man.
thanks. Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate you.